It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the line of fire.
Are you pre-trib, mid-trib, post-trib? Are you historical premillennial, post-millennial, amillennial? Do you even know what these terms mean? Do you care? Michael Brown, thanks for joining us today on The Line of Fire. We're going to sort out end time theologies. We are going to sort out some different views about the last days. And I believe your minds will be open and your hearts will be encouraged today on The Line of Fire. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm not going to be taking calls today. There's a whole lot of ground to cover. If you'd like to leave a comment off the air, or raise a question off the air, here's the number to call, 888-378-FIRE, 888-378-3473. And as always, I'd love to hear from you via email, Dr. Brown, that's drbrown, at askdrbrown.org. Okay, I taught a class recently at Fire School of Ministry called Doctrinal Differences. It was for second and third year students together. And in the class, I looked at some of the thorniest doctrinal issues that arise in the body. I looked also at some heretical things that are outside of the body. And I gave some principles in terms of working through these issues, what you can learn, how to work out differences, where to find harmony, where we can work together. And we spent a day, a good number of hours together, talking about the end times, last days. And of course, if you're familiar with the term, it is eschatology, coming from the Greek word for end things, final things, end of the age. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do my best to be fair to each system without confusing the issues. If you're like really, really into one of the particular points, you'll think I didn't give it the best shot, but I can only do so much in a few minutes. But here's my goal. Are you ready? It is not to say which of the views is right. It's to see where we can learn truth from each of the views, where each of the views has something important to say to us. Ah, all right. So are you ready? And again, if you miss something or if you're in the car for 10 minutes, want to catch it later, just go online, askdrbrown.org, click on The Line of Fire. And you can listen to the broadcast then. Why not pick up the phone, though? Call a friend or send a tweet or put an update on Facebook or whatever you do and let folks know this would be a great day to tune in. Okay, here are the basic three major systems and then a major subdivision, which is maybe the best known of them all, within one of them. They all have to do with the word millennial or millennium, which speaks of a thousand-year reign of Jesus, a thousand-year messianic era where the kingdom of God is lived out here powerfully on the earth. The question is, when does it happen? Does it happen literally? Does it happen before Jesus returns? Does it happen after Jesus returns? Those who believe that Jesus returns before this thousand-year reign and expect a literal thousand-year reign on the earth, after which we go into the eternal age, those would be called premillennialists, right? They believe Jesus is coming prior to the millennium, hence they are premillennialists. And by the way, all of this is going to be important too. None of this is abstract. None of this is just speculation about things that are meaningless. I want to make this show as relevant as possible. So someone who is premillennial believes that Jesus will return literally to the earth. He will set up a literal kingdom on the earth and rule and reign out of Jerusalem. And they would find passages like Isaiah 11, which speak of the reign of God, the rule of God on the earth in very physical, literal terms. And they would look to the book of Revelation, the 20th chapter, which speaks of a thousand-year reign as well. Premillennial. Now, I'll get to variations of that in a moment. The next major view is called postmillennial. And as you can guess by the name, it says that Jesus is returning after the millennium. that there will be a literal return of Jesus, which culminates the ages and brings us into eternity, but that the gospel will triumph before then. As the Great Commission says, go and make disciples of the nations, postmillennialists believe that this will actually succeed, that through the preaching of the gospel and God's people living out the gospel, the entire earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord, after which Jesus will return and bring us into the eternal age. They would point to parables such as those as you find in Matthew 13, that leaven is put in four lumps of dough until all four are completely leavened. Everything rises. That would be a picture of the kingdom of God rising, expanding through the entire earth. Then there's the amillennial view. And as you can guess by that word ah, or the prefix ah, that means not. For example, an agnostic is someone who says we can't know whether there's a God or not. Someone who is apathetic, does not care either way. By the way, did you ever hear the question, what's the difference between ignorance and apathy? I don't know, and I don't care. All right. So someone who is amillennial, just like atheistic, you put that Greek prefix A, the letter A, in front of it, and it negates. So an atheist does not believe in a theistic God. So someone who is amillennial does not believe that there will be a literal thousand-year reign of Jesus on the earth. They would say the kingdom is entirely spiritual. They would say that Jesus did not come to establish an earthly kingdom, but a heavenly kingdom, that he is currently ruling and reigning over his people as king now. That's the kingdom of God. So there will be no physical millennial kingdom. And they'll say, look, Revelation 20 is hardly a place to build doctrine. I mean, this is in the midst of apocalyptic vision. You don't build doctrine. It's the only time it mentions the thousand years. So amillennialists would say there is a spiritual kingdom, not a physical kingdom. In common with premillennialists, many of them would believe that there is an antichrist that will come. Many believe that there will be an end-time apostasy. So the postmillennialists believe there will be end-time glory and victory. The amillennialists, many would hold to an end-time apostasy, as would many premillennialists. But they say there is not a physical millennial kingdom. So premillennial, Jesus comes before the millennial kingdom. Postmillennial, Jesus comes after the millennial kingdom, which is introduced not by his return, but by the preaching of the gospel and discipling of the nations. Amillennial, there is no physical millennial kingdom. Now, maybe the teaching, which is certainly the newest, but one that's become massively popular through the 20th century and into the 21st century, is dispensational premillennialism. Dispensationalists believe that through the ages, God has dealt with the earth and with his people according to certain dispensations. So first there was the age of innocence when Adam and Eve were created before they were sinned. Then there was the age of conscience before law was given. Then there was the age of law, the age of grace. They would look at these different dispensations and they would say God has given real promises to Israel, but because Israel rejected the Messiah as a nation, this is now kind of a parenthetical age, the church age. During the church age, God is mightily at work in the earth, but in the end, as things get worse and worse in the world, Jesus will come, and dispensationalists would classically be pre-tribulational. Jesus will come and rapture us out, catch us out to meet him. Then there'll be a seven-year period on the earth called the tribulation. Then many would divide it into tribulation, and the last half of it, great tribulation. There'll be an antichrist figure ruling and reigning out of Jerusalem, bringing great destruction, havoc on the earth. God's wrath will be poured out on the earth. It will be unprecedented in terms of terror and trouble. And after this, Jesus will return with us, his people, and set up his kingdom in Jerusalem. Hence, premillennial, but with a dispensational emphasis. Now, they're very different views. And I can't tell you how many passages are read differently by dispensational premillennialists versus historic or classical premillennialists versus postmillennialists versus amillennialists. But I actually believe that in each system, even though obviously I don't hold to all four of them, I personally hold to classic premillennialism, but I don't hold to every jot and tittle in a dogmatic way. I personally believe that each of these systems has a certain aspect of truth which is important, that each of these systems can potentially have weaknesses or problems trying to fit all the scriptures together. But what I want to do in the course of this show is give you at least four major takeaways, four major points that I think are essential to have a sound biblical theology of the end times. Now, I'll certainly stir up some controversy with some of the points. It wouldn't be the line of fire if we didn't. But my goal is not ultimately to stir up controversy or to argue about end time views, but to take away several key foundational points. So we're going to sort out end time theology. Stay with us. There's a whole lot more to come, and it's going to make sense right here on The Line of Fire. Thanks for joining us today. Welcome back to The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, so glad to be with you. We're sorting out end time theologies today. If you missed the first segment, don't worry. I'm going to give a quick summary. The goal is not to convince you about any one view. The goal is to try to come away with major takeaways, things that are essential, things that I believe we must hold to and must believe if we are to walk in harmony with the overall witness of Scripture. I'm not going to be taking calls. There's a ton of stuff to cover, but you can leave a comment off the air or raise a question by calling me at 888-378-FIRE. That's 888-378-3473. You can do that during the show or after. Or you can shoot me an email. If you're at our website, askdrbrown.org. Wait. You haven't gone to the website yet? You've been listening for all these weeks? Come on, visit the website. There's tons of edifying material there, hundreds of hours of free teaching, video, audio for you to watch, listen to, articles to read. But while you're there, make sure you sign up for our e-list as well as send in any questions you have by just clicking on contact. Okay, so quick review. The three major views of the end times with one major subdivision: premillennial, Jesus will come literally to the earth, physically to the earth. I said literally, figuratively, literally, physically to the earth, establish his kingdom in Jerusalem, rule and reign over the earth for 1,000 years. And that also believes much in restoration to Israel promises. That's pre-millennial. Post-millennial, the gospel will triumph in the earth. The whole earth will turn to the Lord. And then after the millennial kingdom, after this rule and reign on the earth, Jesus will come again and bring us into the eternal age. Then the amillennial view: there is no physical, literal, millennial kingdom. Jesus is ruling and reigning even now over a spiritual kingdom. At the end of the age, he will return and bring us right into the eternal age. So there will never be a 1,000-year reign of the Lord on the earth. And dispensational, pre-tribulation, premillennialism: Jesus will come before, some say in the middle of, but either before or in the middle of the tribulation, rapture his people out. There'll be hell on earth while we meet with the Lord in heaven. We'll return with him at the end of that 7-year tribulation, and there will be a literal millennium on the earth. Okay. There's some problems with each of the views. There's some real problems, some questions with each view. It doesn't mean that you can't consistently hold to it. If I had people that taught extensively on one of these views on the air, they'll have answers for the various scriptures. But I see some problems with each view. Again, my goal is not to convince you of any particular view. I'm going to get to some takeaways, some things that I feel are essential and important that we should hold to. And I believe that each view has some truth and some important things that we need to learn from. There's a problem with the premillennial view in that it says that we will be caught up to meet with the Lord, right? He will literally return. We'll see him in the clouds of glory, coming in flaming fire. We'll be caught up to meet him and descend together with him. Boy, I mean, it almost sounds like you're making this thing up. It's so wild, and yet it's true. The same God that raised Jesus from the dead will send his son for us, and we will be caught up to meet him. Incredible. So historic premillennialism, classic premillennialism, says that we'll be caught up to meet the Lord. We will be resurrected and we will come back with him. We will escort him here to the earth, and he will set up his 1,000-year kingdom. You say, where's the problem? Well, there's something interesting. We will be resurrected, and we will be with him while the rest of the world, the survivors of the nations that attacked Jerusalem, to use the image of Zechariah 14, will be here in literal physical bodies while we're resurrected. You say, well, that's not really a problem because Jesus was resurrected and was with his disciples. Okay, I accept that. But how about a literal interpretation of some of the passages would point to a physical temple being rebuilt in Jerusalem in the millennial kingdom? That's problematic, isn't it? Are there going to be literal physical sacrifices again? Some say that's not a problem because those sacrifices will point back to the cross. But didn't Jesus do away with the need for ongoing sacrifices? So those are some of the questions that people would raise. A problem with the post-millennial view, which says that the gospel will triumph in the entire earth, is that there are so many passages that seem to speak of the end of the age being marked by righteousness and wickedness. Matthew 13, some of the parables, the wheat and the tares. The tares are removed. The wicked are removed first, and then the righteous shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Or the net that's cast into the sea, it brings in an end-time harvest of both good and bad that are then separated. There are other verses that seem to speak of wickedness increasing right till the end of the age, along with righteousness increasing. Just like in one part of the earth, it can be day, and another part of the earth, it can be night. That's problematic from the post-millennial viewpoint. A problem with the amillennial viewpoint is that so many passages that God spoke with literal intent to Israel now become spiritualized. And that can happen with other systems as well. So many promises where he said, for example, I will scatter you and regather you, that somehow that now means scatter you, that's the Jews, regather you, that's the church. And some of the very literal teaching about God's reign being worked out here on the earth is minimized because we just speak of a spiritual reign. Now, again, I know that people that hold to these different views have answers for these objections and questions. I'm just throwing them out. And then the dispensational premillennial view has some problems in that it fosters an attitude of, well, Jesus could come any moment, and often leads to irresponsibility, often leads to lack of long-term vision and planning, and also makes a dichotomy in teaching between Israel and the church, rather than seeing the church, God's messianic congregation, being the union of saved Jews and saved Gentiles in one new body. It makes such a glaring distinction between Israel and the church that, for example, when Jesus would return, according to dispensational pre-trib teachers, I as a Jew would be raptured out because I'm no longer part of Israel, I'm part of the church, while the Jewish people will suffer here on the earth. There are other issues that come up in these different teachings, but I believe that each one of them has at least one major important emphasis that the whole body should take hold of. I'm not trying to mix and match. I'm not trying to keep everybody happy. I'm simply trying to listen and learn because I see fine teachers through the ages, fine Christian leaders holding to these different views right up until this day. I see, more importantly, much more importantly, certain scriptures that could easily be interpreted one way versus another way, and other verses you could argue back and forth over. I see the points. And because of that, I approach this subject with some degree of humility. You say, yeah, but the Bible's clear. Okay, well, let's see what we can come away with in terms of the Bible being clear. You can have different views. Feel free to call in and leave your opinion at 888-378-FIRE. It'll be off the air, but I will hear it. We'll be back with some takeaways from End Time Theology. joining us on the Line of Fire, Michael Brown, talking about sorting out end time theologies. We get to the good point now in our discussion where I'm going to lay out some key things that I believe all of us should hold to, regardless of whether we are pre-trib, mid-trib, post-trib, pre-millennial, post-millennial, amillennial. I want to challenge you that each of the 4 points I'm going to lay out are points that are important, points that we should all hold to, and interestingly, points that I can take one from each of the different systems to emphasize. I won't be taking calls when I do these special teachings. There's just so much we want to get into and so little time to do it. But feel free to weigh in with a question, with a comment. It can be appreciation. It can be anger. You can set me straight. You can raise a question off the air at 888-378-FIRE, 888-378-3473. Or email me at Dr. Brown, Dr. Brown, excuse me, at AskDrBrown.org. Okay, first thing that I believe is very important concerning end time teaching, and this is something where dispensationalists, pre-trib, rapture people have been very strong. We must emphasize the coming of Jesus. We must emphasize the second coming of Jesus. I don't mean arguing about rapture, pre-trib, mid-trib, post-trib, differences like that. I mean that the appearing of Jesus, the return of Jesus, is a very, very important theme in the New Testament. You say, oh, no. Aren't you aware of the preterist view that post-millennialists hold to? And in point of fact, we know that those prophecies were fulfilled in 70 AD when the temple was destroyed. No, absolutely not. Cannot be. Why do I say that? Very simply, we know that you might interpret some of the verses in Matthew 24, where it speaks of Jesus coming in the clouds, and say, well, that just refers to God coming in judgment. It's apocalyptic language like we have in the prophets. Okay, I don't fully accept that, but I understand the argument. However, there are so many other New Testament verses that talk about what will happen when Jesus returns. I mean, Paul tells the Thessalonians in 2 Thessalonians 1 that when Jesus returns in flaming fire, taking vengeance on those who know not God and don't obey the gospel, that he'll bring relief to the suffering, persecuted believers. That didn't happen in 70 AD. Paul talks about the crown of righteousness that will receive all of those who long for his appearing. That didn't happen. That appearing did not happen in 70 AD. When Hebrews 9 talks about what Jesus will do when he returns, first he came to take away sin, and what he's going to do at the end of the age, that did not happen in the year 70. 1 Corinthians 15 and 1 Thessalonians, the fourth chapter, that talk about the dead and Messiah rising and us being caught up to meet him together in the air and receiving resurrected bodies and being like him forever. Or 1 John 3 that says when he appears, we'll be like him. That has not yet happened. And yet throughout the New Testament, there is a major emphasis on the return of Jesus, on the second coming of Jesus. We need to preach that. And here's the sad reality. It is generally dispensationalists, those who hold to a pre-trib rapture, and yes, can be guilty of silly things like just you show up late for a serve or you show up early for a service because you set your clock ahead, whatever, and it was the wrong time to do it, and you're the only one there. Oh, no, Jesus came and I missed it. Or the absolute absurd, crazy thing that some churches did, you know, rapture practice, jumping up and down to get ready for his coming, or just this hyper living on the edge. He's coming any minute, he's coming in. Oh, why even go to college? Why even get married? Why even think of it? He's coming any minute. Some people live with that. I know that's offensive to some of you the way I'm putting this. I'm just laying out the way some people have gotten a wrong sense of the return of Jesus. The big issue in the New Testament is not so much the when of his return, but the what of his return, the reality of it, the glory of it, the promise of it, what will happen to us when he returns. I want to encourage every pastor listening, if you've not preached on the return of Jesus, I've been meditating on this myself and thinking of the need to do it. May I encourage you as I encourage myself, let's preach on this with emphasis as the New Testament has it, not in terms of end time prophecy, and you can see the things unfolding, look at the events in the world. I know some of you are doing that already. I have a little bit different take on how to approach that. But the reality of it, Jesus is coming. He's going to return. He's going to set everything right. We're going to stand before him, give account. We're going to be changed. This world will come to an end as we know it. Jesus is coming. How then should we live today? Boy, that's important. It's a major, major biblical truth. And I know, because I've been in different settings in the church over the years, that the ones that tend to preach this the most are dispensationalists, those who believe Jesus is coming at any minute or could come at any minute. And I want to urge everyone to learn from our dispensationalist friends and to take hold of the importance of the return of Jesus. No, if you're not a dispensationalist, don't preach it like a dispensationalist, but take hold of the promise. Take hold of the reality. Take hold of the statement of fact. Meditate on it. Live in light of it. Boy, I tell you, it changes perspective. As I've been thinking about this more after teaching about these things with our students at Fire School of Ministry a couple of weeks ago, it just forced me to think about the subject more, to think about the reality of his return, and to say we must emphasize this. I'll say once more, not in a sensationalistic way, trying to match every headline in the newspaper with a biblical prophecy, but in the stark, holy, glorious reality of his coming and what will happen to us when he returns. Jesus is coming. That should be something that every believer holds to, emphasizes, regardless of your end time scheme, and something that we preach and declare. And if your end time scheme is not conducive to that, then I'd encourage you to re-examine your end time theme, because that is an undeniable major New Testament truth. Okay, number two. And this is a strength of premillennialists, as well as dispensational premillennialists. The promises to Israel are literal. The promises to Israel are literal. This is a day for slips of the tongue. First, I said Jesus is coming literally, figuratively, almost to that. And I said the promises to Israel are little. All right. Retake. The promises to Israel are literal. How do I know that? Well, I know it for many different reasons. One is this: when God said he would literally scatter my people, he literally did. When he literally said he would drive us into all the nations, he literally did. When he literally said the temple would be destroyed, it literally was. When he said it would be burned, it literally was burned. When he said that Jerusalem would be trampled under the feet of the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles were fulfilled, that has literally happened. Therefore, I have no question that the same God who spoke those things will finish the promises. In other words, the literality of the restoration has to be just as literal as the judgment. The reality of the scattering must be equaled by the reality and even greater glory of the regathering. And if God could change his promises to Israel, if he could say something literally to Israel and change it or replace it with someone else, then maybe he could do the same thing with the church. Wow. All right, more to come. Stay with us. Talking today about sorting out end time theologies. If you missed the beginning of the broadcast, I laid out the different views: premillennial, classic premillennial, and dispensational premillennial, amillennial, postmillennial. I've given some weaknesses that I find in each of the varied positions, and then some takeaways, a strength from each of the four positions that I'm laying out, and things that I think are essential scripturally that we hold to, believe, walk out, live out. Not taking your calls is just so much to get into today. But feel free, off the air, to leave comments and questions at 888-378-FIRE. That's 888-378-3473. Or email me through our website, askdrbrown.org. Click contact. So one of the first takeaways I emphasized right before our last break was that we must preach and believe that Jesus is literally returning. This has not been fulfilled already in the past, And it's not just a matter of timing. It's a matter of the reality of the event. Jesus is coming. He's coming in flaming fire to take vengeance on those who don't know God. He's coming to catch us up to meet him so that we will be changed and become like him. And we will be with him forever. We must preach and teach. The second thing, the promises to Israel are literal. They are not to be interpreted figuratively, so that they were once given to physical Israel, but now apply spiritually to the church. Oh, apply them spiritually, but don't steal them. Apply them spiritually, absolutely. Every promise in the Word we can learn from, every truth in the Word we can learn from, we can learn from history and God's dealings with his people. Paul emphasizes that in 1 Corinthians 10 as well as in Romans 15. What was written before him is for our benefit. So we learn from this, and everyone can take promises given to Israel and make spiritual application, but don't steal them. They still belong to physical Israel. Just as Jesus said that he would return literally, and the angels, when he ascended, said, just as he ascended, he will descend. Zechariah 14 tells us the same thing. His feet will touch the Mount of Olives. All nations will come against Jerusalem. God will fight and deliver his people who will turn to him as he comes to establish his kingdom on the earth. The promises to Israel are literal. You can debate with me about whether modern Israel is fulfillment of prophecy. I see it as overwhelmingly clear from the scriptures that it is, but we can debate that. But I want to urge you to recognize that God keeps his word, that he doesn't speak in deceptive ways, that when he tells Israel and the Jewish people, no matter what sin is committed, he will keep them as his people on the earth, despite discipline and judgment that will come on them. He will preserve them. Why? Because it's his covenant purpose, because he made promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The promises to Israel will be literally fulfilled. Okay, number three, takeaway number three. The gospel will triumph, not fail. The gospel will triumph, not fail. Postmillennialists like to say that they have an eschatology of victory, and they would point to other views, amillennial view, dispensational pre-tribulational view, and say that these are eschatologies of defeat, meaning that we're expecting everything to get worse. We're expecting Antichrist, deception, apostasy. We're expecting everything to come down. In fact, it's very common on the Line of Fire broadcast that when we'll be talking about bad things happening in society or in the world, people will call and say, yeah, that's just another sign of the end. That's a sign that the coming of Jesus is near. I understand the sympathies and views behind that, and I personally believe that there will be great wickedness on the earth when Jesus returns. But I am also convinced that the gospel will triumph. I have an old book on dispensationalism by an author named Clarence Larkin, and he has a chart on the failure of Christianity written at the beginning of the 20th century. I don't know what he'd write now with the gospel spreading so dramatically over the earth in the 20th century, but what Jesus did on the cross, his death, resurrection, outpouring of the Spirit, will not fail. It will accomplish God's purposes, and there will be a massive and mighty harvest. Romans 11 speaks of the fullness of the Gentiles coming in and all Israel being saved. Revelation 7 tells us that there'll be a multitude that no one can number for every tribe, tongue, people, kindred. Jesus said that he will build his messianic congregation. He will build his church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. He said all authority in heaven and earth is given to him, and therefore we should go and make disciples of the nations. The gospel will succeed. Do I believe that the whole world will get saved before Jesus comes? No, I'm not a postmillennialist. But I believe that there'll be a great, massive triumph of the gospel and advancing of the kingdom of God on the earth. So takeaway number one, Jesus is coming. Preach it, believe it, hold to it. Takeaway number two, the promises to Israel are literal and will be literally fulfilled. Takeaway number three, the gospel will triumph, not fail. Jesus is building his body on the earth. The gospel is going in power, and the best is yet to come. Stay with us. All right, we are cutting it to the wire here on the Line of Fire today, but I've been trying to pour in everything I can to help us sort out end time theologies, pre-trib, mid-trib, post-trib, pre-mill, on-mill, post-mill, and try to come away with major takeaways, without arguing about which position is right, major scriptural truths that I believe are undeniable. Not taking calls, but you can leave feedback or questions at 888-378-FIRE. By the way, make sure you go to our website, askdrbrown.org. We've got an amazing resource offer this week, but it's only available online. Okay, I've said that four major takeaways. Number one, we must preach and believe Jesus is coming. Emphasize the return of Jesus. Not the timing, trying to line it up with the headlines, but the truth of it, the reality of it. Number two, the promises to Israel are literal and will be literally fulfilled. Number three, the gospel will triumph, not fail in the earth. Number four, and this is where I believe amillennialists have a certain truth. Again, I differ with these different views in different ways. I personally hold to classical premillennialism, but I don't claim to have every I dotted and every T crossed in terms of end time views. Here's where I think amillennialists have it right. They do not believe in a physical, literal, thousand-year kingdom. They say that Jesus is ruling and reigning over his body right now. And now, of course, everyone believes that. Some would say that there'll still be a literal millennium, though. Let's not get into that argument now. Let's just understand the importance of recognizing that Jesus, as king, is currently ruling and reigning over his body. And he is building a spiritual kingdom that is not separate from working out God's purposes on the earth. It's not separate from what is happening in this world. In other words, it's not just that he's there on the clouds and he's surrounded by these angels playing harps on the clouds and that we should kind of be doing the same thing here on the earth. No, that's not the point of it at all. The point of it is to say that there is a kingdom right now over which he is ruling and reigning. Yes, ultimately it will be displayed. Ultimately it will be displayed with his final and complete victory over all forces on this earth that stand against God, so that there'll be a new heavens and a new earth wherein righteousness dwell, a new heavens and a new earth where there'll be no more sin or sickness or pain or death or devil or any such thing. But the spiritual reality of that has already been accomplished. We already have the deposit of it. Jesus already has defeated Satan and his powers, and he is allowing in his own purposes certain activity to go on, but he has already triumphed. He already rules and reigns. There is spiritual authority even now. All authority is presently given to him, and we must not just be living out our lives in this world, but we must recognize that we are heavenly people, that we are people of a heavenly kingdom, and as people of a heavenly kingdom, we live out our lives here on the earth. Okay, I'm oversimplifying. I know that people who hold to different views would say, well, you know, you left out this. Trust me, I left out verses on every single one. The point is to understand the different views, and then to say, all right, we may differ on these things. Can we hold to these four essentials? The reality of the return of Jesus. Preach it, believe it. The promises to Israel are literal and not to be spiritualized away or given to someone else at Israel's expense. The gospel will triumph, not fail, as the victory of Jesus goes through the earth. And he is ruling and reigning and extending his spiritual kingdom over multitudes of people every day. I am out of time. We've got some great shows coming your way this week on the Line of Fire. Call a friend, encourage them to tune in, join us online, and be blessed.